into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, very happy to say we are joined by Fiona Steed and Keith Wood to look back on the weekend's action. So, reality check, Keith, that's the phrase I'm hearing the most about Ireland 15, France 56, 8 tries run in.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call. I think when you look back the previous week, Wales were unbelievably poor. I thought Ireland played very well the previous week, and they looked a little bit off the pace this weekend. And I think you get the, not the benefit, whatever the opposite is of the benefit of watching a team that tends to play every week, week in, week out, and has done for the last period of time, like all those French players are, to the fact that the Irish team only has maybe, I think it's 3 or 4 players playing in the Premiership in the English League that are able to play every week. So, they looked a little bit off the pace. France looked far more, I'm going to say, match fit, game fit, but it's just that sharpness that that playing gives you. And they looked sharp. And I would have said Ireland made an awful lot of mistakes that you'd hope that they wouldn't. And I think that the Irish team is a better team than that. And they would expect to be a lot closer, though I wouldn't have expected them to beat them. I think both France and England are significantly ahead of Ireland at the moment.
Do you agree with that, Fiona? Is the gulf that we saw on Saturday not as big when Ireland and Irish players are playing more matches?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the gulf is as big, even if we played them again this week, to be fair. I think Keith touched on it there, like it was a poor performance. And I think that's the first thing we need to look at, is that the performance of the Irish girls was poor on Saturday. They are better than what they did, but it is still what we're judging them on. I don't think we can judge the overall gulf in class based on that one performance. Like, their defensive setup was really bad, offset piece. Their reading of defensive situations was poor, and their line speed was poor, and their decision making in defence was really poor. And added to that, I suppose, there was like their continuity and the ball in contact. Like, I think the French number 11 like ripped the ball twice, and it ended up, you know, in 2 tries. Mm. So there was lots of poor pieces, while we've got two lineouts, you know, resulted in lineout mauls. You know, we lost 5 lineouts. So it wasn't a good performance, and I expected more from them, and I think they are better than that. So that's the first piece. The gulf in class, yeah, it is, but it's not as big as that. I suppose the concern is, will the gulf get bigger? And you know, what do we do about that? I think we'll see on Saturday 2 really good teams going head to head in terms of England and France. I think both games are going to be shown live now. So, you know, we will see what quality games are like. We will see what, you know, a professional setup with girls who are playing week in, week out, as Keith said, in the Tyrrell's Premiership in the top 16 in France, when those games have been allowed to continue. So we will see that, and it will be excellent. They're excellent, excellent teams. And then we'll see 2 teams in Ireland and Italy that are battling for 3rd position. And if at the start of all of this, the start of the season, if, you know, I was told, well, if Ireland finished 3rd, is that a mark of progress? Then I would say, yes, it is. And I still stick to that, that if we finish 3rd and if we put in a really good performance and comprehensively beat Italy, it won't be easy by any stretch, but we need to put in the performance like we did in the autumn against them, and we need to beat them convincingly, then I still think 3rd is progress. So the pace of progress and the pace of change for some people isn't good enough, and there will be people that jump on a happy bandwagon and also are happy to sort of blow up the bandwagon when things go wrong, as they did on Saturday. So for me, you know, to be in the top 3 is progress, and it's where we need to be while we continue to build the structures and everything else that's underneath. If you think of, obviously, the World XV or World 15s, which will come on stream in 2023, it is the top three in the Six Nations that will go into that top tier. And if we're not in that top three at that point, then the gulf will be vast and huge and will only grow and grow. So for me, keeping in touching distance of the top two and staying third isn't the worst piece at the moment, as we continue to bring, I suppose, the likes of Dorothy Wall, Emily Lane, Bevan Parsons, and we continue to bring these girls through who have been, I suppose, playing rugby since they were 7, 8, 9, you know, and to bring a critical mass of these girls through. And that's what we've seen, you know, that's what we've seen this year, is that they're starting to come, that they're starting to come through. So I'm not like, I'm not overly, and I can be a really good critic of the IRFU when I when I put my mind to it, but I'm not overly despondent. Now, come to me afterwards and I'll be up in Dublin on the weekend, because I think the match has been transferred there. But like, if we lose to Italy, then it's a whole other ball game. You know, if we're not third, then that's like, okay, then that's a serious piece.
Mm. And to hone in on that word progress you mentioned for a moment then, Fiona, and some, in some kind of a way, keeping pace with England and France, are certainly not letting that gulf widen. Do you feel Ireland are on track to do that at the moment?
To not let it widen, yeah, we probably have a bit to go with regard to not letting them jump ahead of us. And like you say, 56-15, and you're gone, well, that's a gap that's insurmountable. It's not. This France team drew with Scotland, who are also very, very poor, but they drew with Scotland last year. So that can show what, you know, they were on fire and they were really, really effective and really good at the weekend. So are we on track? Like, so the Women in Rugby Action Plan, which I think he'd dealt with before, and, you know, I was involved in obviously the review back in the day, and we do get updates as to where we are. And they look at participation, they look at people, they look at leadership, and those are the three pillars that I suppose they're basing, the IRFU are basing their growth and their, I suppose, progress on the different spheres. And like, we're doing okay, even despite COVID, our playing numbers are increasing at adult and at youth and at mini level, and that's a real, real positive. Again, it's going to take another 3, 4, 5 years to see, you know, more Eve Higgins, more Amy Lee Murphy Crowe's coming out, and we have to keep on the coattails of the top two in Europe in that intervening period. But I think we are progressing. And I'm not all positive, like, but I've had a couple of days to get over. I was absolutely like a mare on Saturday evening, I tell you. I was just so despondent for them, because I know the work that the girls are putting in on the ground and the S&C and the amount of time they've had together. But we have to keep pace, even if it's slightly back on it, while we put in and embed all of these structures. And to be fair too, and I can talk openly about what we're doing here in Munster. You know, I sit on the Munster Women's Committee, and all of the stuff that our development officers are doing, and it's mirrored across the country. But like, we have regional development squads now at 18, 17, 16, and they've all been working away virtually, you know, on S&C programs, on skill programs, the Munster coaching setup, you know, in terms of getting this stuff out there. Like, Keith Murphy is fantastic. And, you know, we have Ken and Willie in terms of the development officers for the women's game. So they're putting real structures. And again, all of those from Leinster and elsewhere can say, she's only talking about Munster. It's what I know. It's also what I love. But anyway, so I'm of course going to talk about it. So all of these bits have been put in, and the Interpro series in terms of the under-18s playing competitive matches at that. That's really, I was at a few of them the last time that it was played, which obviously wasn't last season. And it's a huge step up. So again, if you look at Dorothy Wall, Emily Lane, Enya Breen, and I think Eve Higgins, we're all on the Munster under-18 team 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I'd have to be corrected on that. But they were all on that together. So they've come through that system. They've come through the likes of Feather, the likes of Mallow, the likes of Bantry. And, you know, they are the clubs that are growing the game. So that's all filtering down. The Give It A Try program, which is for any girls 8 to 14, you know, and they can go and try it out. And we do it at Brough like every year, you know, and people are doing that. So all, they're all the building blocks. You have to put the building blocks in there.
Sure.
And then you have to put the performance piece.
Fiona, was that happening, say, a decade ago, all of those things you're talking about? No, that's all new.
No. Okay. No, they weren't. So this is where, like, you know, so the likes of Fiona Coughlin, you know, started at UL, you know, or the likes of, like, I started at university a decade before that, you know. So this is the piece, but you have to give it time. Now, I go back to this match on Saturday, they were poor. We're not at that top two. But if we can consolidate third and over the next couple of years, bring more and more people of that standard. So we've seen about Dorothy Wall, we've seen Bevan Parsons, you know, they're athletes. They are finely tuned athletes at 19 and 20 years of age, which are only going to get better. But again, it's having enough Dorothy Walls, it's having enough Enya. And we haven't got that at the moment, but we're building it through what all of the provinces are doing and through what the clubs are doing.
Okay.
One piece, but it's not the only piece, so it's not perfect. You know, the AIL, so they set up the women's AIL, reinvented it last year, and it didn't get a chance to get off the ground. And we do need a top level competition for our female players outside of the international window. Now, I'd have discussions with people whether it should be the AIL or whether it should be the Interpro Series. But it's the AIL is the way they've gone, and there's recently been like an AIL forum so that the teams aren't particularly happy with the running of it. Now, it didn't run because of COVID, but they need more support and just a little bit more, I suppose, support around coaching, around, you know, physio, S&C and all of that sort of thing. And the IRFU, I believe, are working with them and engaging with them on that piece. But again, you know, we get a sponsor in, get somebody to, you know, market that. I think Vodafone came on board for certain things. You know, there was the Energy, a community series. So those are all starting to happen. Now, COVID happened in the UK, COVID happened in France. So it's not the, oh, well, COVID. But the girls in the UK, in England, you know, are classed as being elite. So they were able to continue. So that's a huge piece. Whereas our girls here haven't had competition, you know, outside of the internal competitions in the matches, in the in-house matches and stuff. So there's just so many facets to it, but I want people to hold the faith. And like I said, in 2017, like, God, I damned everybody. You know, that was our home World Cup. That was where we should have been contenders for certainly top four. You know, we should have been pushing it, and it was an abject failure. But we have come from that. We continued to go down the hill, you know, and we've started to come back up last season from what was played and what's been done here. So that's sort of...
No, that's great. That's a brilliantly nuanced answer, because, Keith, a lot of the discussion, and myself included, over the last kind of couple of weeks, as we're really focused on events at Six Nations level, can be, well, professionalism or not, or semi-professionalism or not. And Fiona's given a more nuanced view there of the whole thing.
Well, I think after 2013, 2014, there was a fair bit of a dip, actually, in the women's game. And it's funny, when you try to enact a high level of change, which I think has happened over the last few years, we're beginning to see some of the younger, the girls who've started playing 15s and 7s and playing much younger, that this is their game, as opposed to converting from another game or being a really good athlete.
Yeah.
That takes a number of years to try and get through. And I think an awful lot of the girls that have played have also played a lot of sevens. It takes a period of time of playing matches to transfer the skills from sevens to the where you're supposed to be placed on the field, to exactly what's happening in the field. They're very different games. That takes an amount of games to get that. And unfortunately, well, look, we've COVID, obviously, which has been an issue. And unfortunately, the girls have been playing matches among themselves in their training groups. And that's not the same. It's just not the same level of intensity. I think if you're looking at the difference of the last 10 days or so, I remember there's a line Anthony Foley used to say. He said, we're never as bad as they say we are. We're never as good as they say we are. Ireland were put under no pressure last week against Wales, like literally none at any stage. They were able to run onto the ball with, have time to, you know, assert themselves and get themselves into a strong position in contact. That wasn't really allowed. So suddenly a mistake is made, then another mistake is made. Mistakes compound when you don't, when you're not fully match sharp or you're not fully used to it. So it's all the work that's happening last year, the year before, this year. It's whether that'll pay dividends over the next couple of years. So I think that is that's what people are kind of hoping for and waiting for. Some of the other conversations that are going on in terms of professionalism or semi-professionalism and things like that, I don't know that that's necessarily right at the present moment in time. And I do think that there's a huge suffer because there's nothing happening. There's no money coming in. There's nothing being generated by it at all at the moment. So I think there's an element of patience that's required. It does become a really big game because Italy are well able to play and are able to get their act together. So it's not like with like, and we keep talking about like with like. I didn't think it was like with like playing against France at the weekend because those girls looked seriously sharp. They've played an awful lot of rugby. And for me, it's their offloading, but it was also the expectation that there was somebody on their shoulder running onto it, knowing that there's going to be an offload. That makes it almost impossible to defend. You don't have a defensive line. So I think it was. I think a lot of the girls look shell-shocked by the pace of the game, by the pressure that they were put under. They fought all the way to the end, well beaten, but still scored near the end. You know, so I think there's a huge level of pride in it. It was a huge learning element for these girls as to exactly how far they can go. And they're waiting for the next group of girls that are coming through that system. So when you change all the structures, it doesn't change overnight. It does take a period of time. And I hope that we see the dividends in the next couple of years.
Okay. Well, big picture, very interesting. Let's dig into the game then from the weekend with the view to keeping pace with France and England and finishing third in this championship. Some of the tries in the first half, you alluded to them, Fiona. You know that first try off scrum, the Bujard try, the Caroline Bujard try? You know, that seemed like a moment where you all these 20 camps together and suddenly you're tested in real time and split-second decisions are being required and you see the difference between prep and training and then matches against top quality opposition. Emer Consuline there, did she not quite trust inside player to make the tackle, or was she between a rock and a hard place? You know, that moment off scrum for Ireland, what happened there in your view?
So there's been this thing all season, in my view, when we've been watching things from home, is, you know, the defensive setup is very narrow in general. So all the teams are setting up really, really narrow, trying to push, you know, the opposition out, trying to get them to force, you know, to the outside. And it automatically leaves the space on the outside, but then you have to be able to cover it. But I think, and not wanting to, you know, to pin on anybody, but I think the setup was wrong in that. I think Emma was too narrow. I think she was turned in, and yes, I think possibly not quite trusting, you know, Eve Higgins inside her, and therefore, you know, she was caught then because she didn't go out. So that can be a trust thing. I mean, Eve Higgins is doing. She's transitioning from sevens, and it's great that we have the seventh players to transition in. But defending at 13, I mean, we've said it, you know, so many times. It is so crucial, especially off set piece, and I would suggest that she's not quite as familiar or as comfortable defending at 13 yet, because it does take huge, huge time, and there is that piece, and there might have been a trust issue there. And they were so sharp, but it just looked too easy. You know, it just looked really easy. And I know in the first scrum, I think did we get a free kick or a penalty because France pushed early, but really, like, their scrum, like, we were watching it here, and we were all the components of the house were impressed with the, you know, with the, I suppose, the technical ability of the props, but also the athleticism of, you know, of the French props. And I can't remember now the tight head's name, but she's only 19 or 20. And that was fantastic. And I think I think our starting front row, I think Lindsay Pete, you know, I think Tina Maloney, I think they're really, really good. And I think Linda Dujon, you know, she has developed into a power athlete, but Linda's still learning scrummaging and learning the game from that perspective. outside of that, I think we don't quite have the strength and depth. And we saw it the week before, you know, when the girls came on. So they're not, you know, they're still growing and learning. And it's like Keith said, you know, they're learning on an international pitch because there hasn't been the time and there hasn't been the games from that. And that's a huge piece. Like the French scrum, when they got it right and got the dip. Now they did step early a couple of times, and that's what gave the free kicks. But they were powerful. So yeah, but I would say it was a bit, maybe a trust issue, and yeah, it wasn't a good line. But they also defended, like, two of the scrums they had, and I'm thinking and trying to visualize now as we're doing this, because I didn't realize we'd be going back on match play. But two of the scrums, Hannah Turrell set up, you know, directly behind the scrums.
Well, sorry, could I jump in there actually? Because I do remember that, because I took note of it, because it was so striking. It was in the 45th minute, and Hannah Turrell, as you said, lined up behind the scrum, and it was like halfway line territory. And Fiona Coughlin spotted it straight away. She said, "This is weird. I don't like the look of this at all." And Hugh Cowell said as well, there's a 5-3 on the open side. And there was quite a delay in the scrum. I mean, that was an issue anyway. And God, we should talk about scrums some night and what a blight they are at times. But it was so worrying, because the commentary team for about a minute were saying, this setup is odd. This isn't good. There's a 5-3. Maybe Sene Naupu was saying to Hannah Tyrrell to come over, but she wasn't coming over. There was nothing coming from the sideline. And suddenly France made 30, 40 metres. Bujard scores her second try. Like, that's kind of, when you've 20 camps in, Fiona, that's kind of where you have to say, that's unacceptable. Like, that's not good enough. That's not a standard.
No, and that's what I had, you know, as when I was doing a brief prep to come on, was the defensive setup, you know, wasn't good. And like, we all know when there's a big blind side and they're going to do the old back row move in the 8-9-15 and attack that. And was she trying to half put them off? Because obviously Emma Considine was in the backfield, you'd imagine. And they think that they would get across, but it was bizarre because she was neither here nor there. And there was another scrum where, you know, I think it was when Manager came on, and she's a phenomenal athlete, and she went into 8, and like, she just waltzed past them on the blind side anyway, you know, and Dorothy Wall didn't even manage to, you know, to pin her. So you sort of wonder, well, it was a defensive setup.
Fiona, was there, like, for me, I was looking at two or three of those different parts in the game. For me, there, you mentioned trust, and it's a trust issue. You have trust issues when you're almost doubting your own system, or you're doubting the people that you're playing against. There also is positioning problems, you know. So, you know, when your 10 defends from the middle of a scrum, she's not entirely sure what side to go. She's, I would have said, also a little bit uncertain as to what side the scrum was going to get up. So didn't want to be exposed on that blind side, but actually they were stacked up on the other side. So almost hedging her bets, which again is the amount of time you either train or you play, but there's been a lot of training. So so that for me is part of the criticism, is not fully understanding it. But as well, look, not to labor the point, but with having several sevens players in the back line, they play exactly what they see in front of them. That's fine. It's just not fine in 15s, sure, because you need to have a link to the person next to you always.
Yeah, and on the penalty, Kent, Keith, the point was made by Hugh Cowell on commentary. They gave away Ireland 14 penalties against Wales, and that was obviously a game, as you said, that they weren't under huge pressure in. At one point towards the end of the match, they were up to 18 penalties. For you, Keith, were these understandable pressure penalties against a better team, or were too many of them just a little bit careless / you know, shooting yourself in the foot?
Yeah, I think they're both, actually. Both. I do think it's amazing that pressure compounds.
Yeah.
And you end up making, if the ball is moving very fast and you're you know, sucking diesel and you're trying to get yourself into a position to do something, you know, if the ball's been in play for any period of time and it's been very, very fast, that exacerbates everything, like it always does. But still, some of them are simple, going off your feet. The yellow card, you can kind of understand why you're pulling down, but you can't pull down because it's going to be a penalty try and a yellow card. And for me, I know, again, it simplifies it just a little bit too much. For me, there just was a difference in preparedness. And I'm saying that because of the amount of games. And I think if you go back at some of the men's games in the Six Nations before Christmas, when there hadn't been a huge amount of games playing, the error rate in those games was extraordinary. And then the second you go and play against a team that is more battle-hardened, and it could have been a week in the autumn, but in this instance, you know, Ireland have only played, they've only played two matches in how long? 10 months, 12 yeah, months yeah. more, maybe. That, you know, they're when a team is playing with confidence and flying and are playing all the time, you're just chasing everything. So, look, I think there are things that can be sorted out very quickly.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the defensive setup can be sorted out. But like so many teams, they just need to play games, and you're not playing games at the moment, or not too many. So it's what can they learn? Can the girls not be despondent from the weekend? Can they accept the fact of that it was too high against Wales? Can they accept the fact that actually the criticism is real but doesn't have to be taken to heart? And can they actually have the attitude to say, well, actually, we can show what we really are and prove it for the whole game against a very similar team, you know, in terms of standard.
Mm. And certainly there wasn't a despondency afterwards, I would have said, either. You know, Keir Griffin gave an interview and, you know, she was saying, look, I'm not even accepting that it was one-sided because we fought all the way and we're not going to get down. And she was already, Fiona, talking about recovery starts now and huge game against Italy. So I didn't get the sense, a team that were kind of shell-shocked in so much as you can be after a defeat like that. The other thing we should probably say for people listening who maybe didn't capture or didn't watch the game, rather, is we're not capturing just how good France were. Like, they're a joy to watch. Like, they're a brilliant advertisement for the game if you were watching as a neutral. I think at the Ménage try to make it 48-8, she came off the bench. I think she's been nominated for World Player of the Year twice. I mean, this was like try from the end of the world stuff. This was brilliant running lines and forwards involved and offloads and pace and skill set. And like, obviously, at that stage, the match was over. So to be honest, I was quite happy to watch France do their stuff because bloody hell, they're a great watch.
No, absolutely. And Ménage is like, she is phenomenal. And she'd just come off the back of sevens training. They'd been in Dubai at an invitational piece. And like, it was her twin sister actually plays in the wing, but she got injured the week before, and actually it's phenomenal, but so many of them are, and that interchangeability piece that they're able to do with their sevens and 15s, and that we've started to do, something I was looking for a couple of years, is right. to get the sevens players in. So, but it does take time, and you know, you look at what can be done more and what can be done better, and it is the game time thing. And it's like, last year was the first time that, you know, the IRFU were going to take the women on a tour, on a summer tour. You know, there was things set up, and that's what they need. They need that extra piece, because you can be together for 20 sessions, but if you're still only battering Ciara Griffin against Dorothy Wall, it's still only Ciara Griffin against Dorothy Wall.
Yeah.
And
the sevens players in particular, you'd feel sorry for, because they want to be learning their craft at AIL level, at a good AIL level or Interpro level, not against France live on TV.
Absolutely, but then it's also, I don't feel sorry for anybody who gets to play for Ireland, I have to say. I think it's a huge honour, and I think, you know, when you're selected to do so, you have to make the most of it. That being said, the situation around it, we can't do anything about that with COVID, but we can do stuff going forward, and we've alluded to some of it. And I think, you know, reinforcing the AIL or the Interpros, I think, you know, the under-20s team getting something in that vision so that there is a step up. So it's all very well that Dorothy Wall and Bevan Parsons have been phenomenal at 18 and 19. But really, not everybody will be able to make that leap. So we do need another piece. And you said it earlier, and it's like people that are saying, oh, we go professional, that's it, it's not fair, they should be professional. Like, that's just blanket comments for the sake of it. You have to look at all of the other pieces underneath it. At the moment, would I realistically say there's 30, 35 players that you put on a professional contract? I would not, okay? And I think you need to be realistic about that piece. I think we will have, and I think in time to come, that will be the conversation and that will be the question. And I think World Rugby have a piece here to do as well, you know, in terms of they've set up the WXV, the World 15s, they're marketing this as their piece for women's rugby and the global calendar. So there's a piece there that they need to do as well around supporting the lesser nations. And I don't count Ireland as a lesser nation, but I also talk about, you know, Kazakhstan, you talk about Sweden, you talk about other countries. So there's a much bigger global picture, which I know we're not getting into now, but there's an onus there as well to support it, that it works. And for me, as long as we're in the top cohort of that, as long as we're competing against, you know, the England, the Frances, the New Zealand, the America, and plus or minus Canada or Australia, that we're in that set. That's where we need to be, because it'll be really hard to get into it if we're not in it.
Yeah.
And it's what we do. But professionalism today or tomorrow or next week isn't the answer. Like, if you ask 30 girls, you know, of that standard, right, will you take a contract? Okay, first of all, I don't think there are a few can afford it right now. Obviously, they're letting people off whose jobs it is to do other stuff in rugby. And also, you know, are people going to give up their job as a teacher or a nurse or a doctor to do this for 3 years or 2 years, you know, and the sustainability? People who just say these blanket statements haven't thought about it long enough and hard enough to actually, you know, go, right, this is the process. These are the blocks that you're going to put in place to do it. I see it at some stage down the line that we perhaps could have a semi-professional setup. I see it that by 2023, we will if we are going to support the women to compete at a world stage in terms of the global calendar, then we will have to put things in place. And women will have to make a choice in the same way that men make a choice, but they sort of get a bit more longevity out of it. And there is obviously more to gain out of it still. And, you know, I'm quite a feminist, but I'm not into, well, the men get paid, the women get paid. You have to look at the whole piece. But I never want to see us losing 56-15 to France again. Cause that was a hard watch. You know, I know you managed to enjoy Ménager and all the rest,
I didn't enjoy the first half, but by second half, I faced the inevitable. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in. Before we go, Keith, Rainbow Cup in the air. I mean, it doesn't quite feel like it. So this Friday, suddenly Ulster will play Connacht. And at the same time, the Stormers will be playing the Sharks in Cape Town, and Edinburgh will be playing Zebre, and Leinster on Saturday then will play Munster at the RDS. Round two will have Munster against Ulster. Connacht will be away to Leinster. Round three, and so this takes us up to May 14th, the week before the Heineken Championship final. Munster have Connacht at home and Leinster have Ulster at the RDS. And then after that, it's a little bit TBC. From an Irish perspective, each province would be looking to face one South African team and then two other teams from Scotland, Wales or Italy. Top two make the final on June 19th. Top two overall, that is, not just to Irish provinces. Top two overall into the final June 19th. The first Lions match is a week later. So good luck to everybody who's involved in all of those games. What's your sense here, Keith? Will the provinces go in fully loaded? Will they be taking this super seriously? Will they wait and see what's happening with the tournament from a South African point of view? Like, those games are still, you know, very much to be confirmed. An odd one. I think this is creeping up on everyone. Like, the Rainbow Cup coverage is not maybe going to capture the imagination this week, I don't think.
Yeah, the pages are full of it this week, aren't they? It's quite hard to get excited with something that was made up on the back of a fag packet. But I don't know. I think it's a competition. I'm still not entirely certain. I'm happy with the South African teams in the Pro 14. I think the Pro 14 is a very unusual competition. It's geographically all over the place. I don't know whether the history of the sport means that will be sustainable over a long period of time. And I still think there'll be some composite over the next number of years. But in this period of time, if I was a member of any of those teams, I would be trying to get the best exposure to as many players as I possibly can, to get people blooded that haven't been blooded so much, to get them blooded with some guys who are trying to get and play in a Lions jersey as well. And I think if the Lions wasn't going ahead, I think you'd see them almost as development teams. And I think you'll end up getting a mix of old and young for all of them. And I hope that that's what happens, because sometimes when they talk about blooding players, they change 20 players in the squad and it's like an under 20s team. Whereas if you can have half and half, you can get an awful lot out of it. Some guys will be tired at the end of the year. Some guys won't be going on the lines. Some guys may require a bit of a break and might be able to do it. I still can't get fully excited over it.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's hard to know what to expect.
Well, we're trying to understand what the competition is, and they haven't organised some of the matches yet, and they don't quite know whether people are going to be able to travel or not. Mm. And I understand the difficulty that sits with COVID and that. But look, I like the idea of Munster playing Leinster. I like the idea of the derby matches that we can have. We're having a good few of them. But I'd like to see it. I'd like to see what the teams have learned from it. And from a Munster perspective, I want to see whether they've learned how to unlock a Leinster defence that has eluded them all season.
Fiona, is the Rainbow Cup getting you excited?
No. No, it's not. And even... Oh, look, even trying to think ahead to the Lions or whatever. Like, I was lucky enough to be down in South Africa in 2009. And, it was phenomenal. It was such an experience. It was brilliant. That excites me if it goes ahead. The Rainbow Cup doesn't excite me, but I can see the value in it. I can, and Keith is saying, you can see, you know, that if they blend it right and if they use it for the right reasons and rest the people that need to be rested and, you know, bring forward a few people. But it doesn't really excite me, no.
Yeah, I think people are generally in that boat. Before you go, there's a fundraiser you want to mention.
There is, thanks a million. So I'm in Cappamore and the GA Camogie Club, which I'm very much part of. We're doing a giant fundraiser for ourselves and Milford Hospice. So it's called the Munster March. And we're going to virtually walk around the 6 GA stadiums, and it's a competition over the 450 kilometres. So people can donate by logging on to www.capmoregaa.ie, and there's an I donate link there, and half the funds go to Milford Hospice. So it'll be a good bit of crack. We're taking on the juvenile girls, are taking on the boys and the senior men and the senior women, so you can get the most kilometres under the belt in the 10 days. So it's starting on Friday, the 23rd.
Ah, well, sure, listen, there'll only be one winner.
Absolutely. I'm a winner.
Thanks so much. Great to have you on this evening, Fiona. Keith, as ever, thanks a mil.
Thanks.
Great to see you.
Should let you know, Leeds 0, Liverpool 1. 38 minutes gone at Elland Road.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.